Welcome to Unreal Bluegrass. I'm Steve Martin, your host. Our guest in the second hour is Bob Minner. Bob has released a brand new album from Sulphur Springs to Rising Fawn, The Songs of Norman Blake, and it is fabulous. We're going to discuss with Bob his career that led him up to doing this album and all the help that he had. It's just an amazing set of music. We're going to start this part of the program off with Ginseng Sullivan, which is a great Norman Blake tune. They're all great. But you'll hear that, and then we're going to talk to Bob and play some more songs for you from that album. I'm so happy to have Bob Minner as a guest right here on Unreal Bluegrass, and you should be happy, too. Thanks so much for tuning in. To the audience of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard a great new recording of Ginseng Sullivan featuring Ron Block, and it's on a brand new album from my guest today, Bob Minner. Bob, how are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, sure. The name of Bob's new album is From Sulphur Springs to Rising Fawn. It's the Songs of Norman Blake. It's on EMG, and we'll come back and remind you about those things later. But there's 15 cuts on here, and it's all about Norman Blake songs, which I'm a sucker for. Absolutely. Everything he's done is just, it's just so easy and difficult at the same time as you're trying to play guitar. But the songs are so easy and nice to listen to and complex, but not. I mean, just you tell me a little bit about why Norman Blake has placed itself so much in your heart and head to where you had to do an album of his songs.
Well, you know, I got hooked on Norman Blake when I was 12 years old. I had enough money from playing music locally to buy a cheap Bentley guitar, and my dad took me to this record store up in St. Louis called Boot Hill Records, which he frequented quite a bit, and we already had in the household, my dad was an old-time banjo player, so we had a bunch of string band music, clawhammer banjo albums, and so I had enough money to buy this guitar from the record store back in the days where you could buy vinyl records and guitars in the same place.
Right.
And right, the good old days. And I just saw this record, Whiskey Before Breakfast, which was it had the sticker on the cover, Norman Blake's guitar album.
Yep. So I bought it. I had it.
Yeah, and that was kind of like the entry. And that's when I was 12, and I'm 56 now. And for the past 30 years, I've made my living playing acoustic guitar with the country artist Tim McGraw, and that's been a great job. But you know, along with all of that, I'm an old bluegrass guy, and Norman Blake certainly has been through that whole journey as well. It's always been kind of like a safe refuge. And so what happened was, you know, Tony Rice had passed in December of 2020, and that left a pretty big void. And George Gruen lives pretty close to me, and we have breakfast sometimes. And on this particular morning, it was in February of 2021, I had breakfast with George, and we went to his shop, and I was telling him that I wanted to do another, since we're still in kind of pandemic mode, I wanted to do another record for myself, maybe some guitar tunes or some stuff that I've written or whatever. And I told him, I said, there was always one Norman Blake song that I always wanted to remake, and it was called Lonesome Jenny. And I said, but you know, it has a cello on it. Nancy plays this incredibly great cello solo twice in the song.
Yeah, and let's Norman Blake, you're talking about his wife, Nancy.
Yes, Nancy Blake, right. Yeah. And I said, I don't know any cello players. And so George picks up his phone and says, well, why don't we call Norman and Nancy? And, of course, I'm freaking out because I've never met Norman or talked to him. And in, like, you know, 10 seconds, there's Norman's voice. And so we have a conversation, and it was nice and everything, and kind of left it at that. And I went home, and for a couple of weeks, I just stewed it over. I told my wife, Ginger, I said, you know, especially with Tony passing, and you know, when your heroes start to go, I said, I think I need to do a Norman Blake tribute album. And so I had written, and I had been a songwriter, a bluegrass songwriter. I've written with Ronnie Bowman and a few others on the record, Tim Stafford and others. And so I had a certain circle of friends that I knew, you know, really loved Norman as well. And so getting the people together probably wasn't going to be the problem. It was like, oh, how am I going to do the record? So Adam Englehart, who runs Engelhart Music. Yep. He actually does the administration for my songwriting catalog. And so I approached Adam and I said, hey, here's my idea. I want to do a Norman Blake tribute album. And here's some people that I know. What do you think? So he kind of gave me the green light. And that was really just kind of how the whole thing started.
Well, you have so many great guests on here, not only Ron Block that we heard in the opening cut that we played, which is not the first cut on the album, but it's the one that we started this conversation with Ginseng Sullivan. You have, of course, you mentioned Ronnie Bowman and Tim Stafford are both on here. Dale Ann Bradley does it lends her gorgeous voice to a tune. Sean Camp, there's two things from Sean I'm going to ask you about, both of them, but one I'm really curious about, Mike Compton, Chris Eldridge, Vince Gill, Trey Hensley, Jeremy Stevens and his wife, Karina Rose Logsdon, who I'm a huge fan of both of them, and Kenny Smith.
Yeah,
and
me too.
And just great, there's just great players on the whole thing, and it's a really fun, and you mentioned this guitar album, and we talked a little bit off the air. I was the first album I bought was Whiskey Before Breakfast.
Right.
And so he had the guitar album on it, a gold sticker on it. And that's when we all bought vinyl, when you could save up $4 or $5 and
that's
do
right.
that. Same thing I did. So I bought that Norman Blake, and not knowing who he was, really, I'm not ashamed of it. I just didn't know who he was. And I thought, well, if it says it's a guitar album, I should probably get it. And I remember, you know, back in those days, if you left the arm up on your LP player, it would just play over and over and over and over.
That's right.
And I turned off the lights, and I said, after the first time through, I just turned it on and laid on the floor and just laid there and listened over and over and over, and it was it was just magic. I mean, I thought, who? And then the Blake and Rice things came out that came to my attention right away, and there's two of those, and one of those features Doc Watson on a couple cuts. I think that's the second one they did together. But
that's right, yeah, Blake and Rice too, yeah.
And when
Doc's on there.
Yeah, so when you get Tony and Norman Blake, and then throw in Doc Watson just for fun. I mean, those are just killer recordings. And so the point of the story is this, that not only is Norman a great player, he's a great songwriter. And so these songs that you put on here are things that you've kind of gathered from his writings. And it's just a wonderful 15 cuts. It just has a great feel to it to me. I just love listening to it over and over. I yet to lay on the floor and turn off the lights. because mostly I'm driving, and it doesn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. No, and the song selection was the thing, too. You know, as I say in the liner notes, there's no way to do a Norman Nancy tribute album and get everything in on even, you know, two or three albums. There's just the body of work is so huge.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of wanted to choose songs that were a combination of, for lack of a better word, you know, the hits, like the songs that are familiar to most people, you know, like Ginseng Sullivan or Ridge Road Gravel or A Green Light on the Southern. Because, you know, certainly Tony had made those songs probably the one who really brought him to a broader life.
Church, and I think that's true also, maybe it's just but Church Street Blues, I think most people would immediately associate with Tony.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, so choosing the songs, I had included those, but I also wanted to kind of include some obscure ones, like Widow's Creek is an old instrumental off the Old and New album. I wanted to get that in. And nobody finer than Kenny Smith. You know, he's such a great player, good friend.
Yeah, he's great.
And then, of course, the two Nancy Blake mandolin songs. I've always been a huge fan of her mandolin playing. So the one with Mike Compton, Hanging Dog, was a given. Year of the Locust, Farewell to Old Rufus. You know, those two songs are Nancy Blake originals. And so I wanted to kind of give her some props up on her mandolin work. So there's some, you know, and the Lonesome Jenny song, that's kind of obscure. So I think it's a nice blend of both worlds, the well-known songs and the obscure stuff. So, and 15 songs, you get your money's worth, I hope.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this about his Norman Blake style. Can you, and we'll talk more about the songs, but I'm talking to Bob Minner if you're just tuning in on Real Bluegrass. And it's a great album, from Sulphur Springs to Rising Fawn, the songs of Norman Blake. From a guitar player's point of view, what do you find about his style of playing? He has a different approach. He doesn't sound like Tony. Doesn't sound like Doc. He sounds like Norman.
Well, you know, I think I'm still trying to figure, after all these years, I'm still trying to find a suitable answer for that in some ways, because what he presented is something that is really just kind of uniquely, almost uniquely Norman, in the same way that Tony is uniquely Tony and Doc is uniquely Doc. I think any established flat picker these days would probably agree with me that, you know, there's that core Mount Rushmore, if you will, of the forefathers. You know, and certainly I would include Clarence White in that.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, you have those guys that are just like at the head of everything, and then the rest of us are just imitating and amalgamating and trying to do what we do and put our own spin on it. But I think the thing that kind of got me with Norman was just the authority that he played with. There was a certain amount of abandonment, and I don't even know if that's the right adjective, but it seems like when he would play, he was just going for it. And there's a rawness, there's a realness, there's an immediacy to it. And I think that's a place that I would start. But, you know, he's uniquely Norman Blake, just like his songwriting.
Yeah.
His songs are, they're on par with any other great American writer. They just happen to be songs, you know, by a great American guitar player. And I think his songwriting gets kind of overlooked sometimes.
It does. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because there are songs on here that come to my mind, whether I'm thinking about Norman Blake or not. But let me add this word, see if this fits in with your description. I put you on the spot to say describe, and I know that's difficult. But I always thought that, yes, all those abandon and all those creativity, but I always thought he was the most relaxed from a technical point of view. He always sounded like he was just like, having a good time, and you try to reproduce it, it's a different thing, but he always seemed to be so, now whether it was his song with a vocal that made it sound so relaxed, but his playing seemed so clean and clear, and but also relaxed and not rushed.
Yeah, that's the other thing too. I think because I think the way he grew up playing, the relaxedness of it. You know, when I watch his right hand in videos, you know, it's just so loose, it's so relaxed.
Right.
There's not a stress to his playing.
That's a much better description than my stress free.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. And his mechanics.
Stress free.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, you know, and I think I'm still trying to figure out how he plays like that. You know, and of course, certainly now in his older age, he's 84.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the fiery Norman Blake that was killing it on, you know, those early records. But he still has that fire in his belly. He still has that loose wrist that I can't figure out. So he's learned to adapt. It's just a different version of Norman Blake these days.
I love. He did, I guess, a couple albums ago, he did a song about the lighthouse keeper on the river, where he does a little description of the story about how he gets to song. And I love that, hearing from him again, because it's like he's sitting there with you telling you this story about the light on the keeper of the lighthouse on the river, and the guy's got a great job now. And it's just, about that capsule. And if I had to say, go find what Norman Blake is about, I would say listen to that intro and then that song, because it just seems that it's so perfect for him.
Yeah. So what is it, the $15 a month?
Yeah.
The guy was going to get paid $15
a month. That's right.
And they thought they were just...
They were set. They were set forever of the government, the government light. Yeah, that's great.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I was going to interject. The other thing that, and especially when I started delving into songs for the record and examining lyric, the thing that kind of came back to me and was actually more magnified was, you know, the subject matter that he writes about, whether it's Green Light on the Southern or Lighthouse on the River or Ridge Road Gravel or Jensen Sullivan.
Or even Bob, Church Street Blues, that's what maybe people don't recognize it if they go to Nashville now, but that's where It was kind of some hard times trying to write some songs, but go ahead. I know what you're going to say, but please do your
work. Well, you know, here's an example. You know, Ridge Road Gravel. I was fortunate enough to get my buddy Chris Eldridge from Punch Brothers on the record, and we decided to cut that one. And the reason that was important to me is, of course, you know, Chris had a relationship with Tony, and so I had called Norman, and I said, hey, you know, Chris and I are going to do Ridge Road Gravel. And Norman never recorded that song by himself. It was just on the Blake and Rice album.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked him about that, and he says, yeah, that'd be great. He says, be sure to dedicate it to Tony from me, because he was a friend of mine, too. Well, so we cut the song, and so the second time I had gone to Norman's, I took Kenny Smith. Me and Kenny Smith went down, and there's this, the county judge, Joel McCormick, is a great old friend of Norman and Nancy, and Joel took me and Kenny around, and was just kind of showing us what there is of Rising Fawn, and then what used to be Sulphur Springs, which really doesn't exist anymore.
Okay.
So Joel says to me and Kenny, I'm driving, and Joel says, hey, he says, Bob, he says, make a right here. And so we turn on this gravel road. Now, he says, you're in what used to be Sulphur Springs, Georgia. And he says, we're going to take this road. It's about 4 miles. He says, and we're going to end up in Sulphur Springs, Alabama, which used to be this kind of this retreat place where there were literally
Sulphur Springs, yeah, sure.
For people to, you know, to bathe in and for medicinal purposes. So anyway, he tells me, he says, yeah, he says, this is called the Ridge Road. Okay, it's a gravel road. So when we get back to Norman's house, I ask him about that. He says, oh, yeah. He says, that's the Ridge Road. He says, I used to walk that in the dark as a kid. Well, that's where the song Ridge Road Gravel comes from. And so I guess my point, without trying to be too long-winded, is, you know, when you see these locations and these things in real life that these songs are about, you know, it gets even more surreal, because that just shows how great of a songwriter and a poet he really is.
And he just used things that he saw or experienced or read about. I mean, it reminds me a lot. What you're describing right now reminds me a lot of a tune that all of us know, Paradise, John Prine. Until you drive west in Kentucky, you don't realize until you start seeing there's the city of Paradise and there's Green Room and all that. He's just writing things about as he sees them, and he fits it all in the story. And the coal mines are there.
That's it.
Yeah.
And
really,
I have a theory about this with Norman.
Go ahead.
I've never expressed it, but the more I've talked about it, the more I kind of think it's true. There's a part of me that thinks that Norman, even though he lived in Nashville, even though he traveled with Johnny Cash and Kris Kristofferson and did all of these other things, there's a part of me that thinks that even though he was physically removed from Rising Fawn and that Sulphur Springs there, I don't think he ever left. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think these songs were just conduits for him to reconnect and just revisit these places and these experiences that he had growing up. And, of course, him and Nancy have lived back in Rising Fawn since, I think, probably the late 70s, you know. But it's almost like he wrote these songs as a way to just, you know, express how he grew up in his childhood.
Yeah.
They were like old friends to him, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's a great way. Let's play that cut since we've kind of led up to it. It's Chris Eldridge on vocal and guitar and you on guitar. And it actually is Ridge Road Gravel, and it's dedicated to Tony Rice from Norman Blake, parenthetically, after this is cut number 10. Let's play that, Bob, and I'm going to come back and talk to you some more about some of this music. So for the audience, you're going to hear Ridge Road Gravel off of the brand new Bob Minner's brand new album, From Sulphur Springs to Rising Fawn, the songs of Norman Blake. So we'll be right back in a minute. Hey, Bob, you know, that is such a great cut, and I've known him, Chris Eldridge, for a long time, because he started so young. But boy, he really has developed this powerful voice, and his vocals are as startling as his guitar play is anymore.
Oh yeah, you know, that was the thing. It's like I wanted him to really bring what he does to that song, and he certainly did. And I've been a fan of his guitar playing for years, and you know, he's young enough that I've kind of. Not to sound like the old guy, but, you know, I've watched him really develop as a guitar player, you know, from his earlier childhood days, you know, in his teen years, on into just a world-class guitar player. But I love his singing. I told Chris, yeah. I said, I wish he'd do a solo album.
I felt the same way. I mean, I saw him when he would show up with Seldom Scene. When they were kind of caught around again, and I thought, who is this? Well, it was Ben Sun, and we figured it out after that. But yeah. He was just this flop, you know, this mop-haired kid, and it's like, wow, he can. But I think his singing is really, that was a great cut. That's a great choice for that.
And he's just one of the nicest guys. I mean, you know, nice doesn't even cover. He's just one of the sweetest, nicest guys out there. And so I was really just thankful and fortunate to have his participation.
Good. Good choice. Now this, I have a curiosity about the next cut. The number 12 is one of my all-time favorite songs, but the 11th cut is just Sean Camp, and then Sean sings a song, but it's just a recitation, and I have no idea what the Nameless Photograph is.
Okay. So, that's a recent Norman song, or recording. It was on his Brushwood Stories album, which came out a few years ago. And so, bought Brushwood Stories. I heard Norman do the recitation of that. And there was just something about the story that just really, you know, really kind of caught my attention. And it's just one of those things that you just kind of keep to yourself and go, hey, maybe not a lot of people would know this or like it, but I really like it. And so when it came time to do the record, I just wanted to put it on there because, number one, it's you don't expect it.
No.
You know, you certainly don't expect that. And plus Sean's talking voice is so great, you know. And so the story of that song, well, after we, you know, I called Norman and I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this recitation of the Nameless Photograph. And he was really pleased because I think he really likes it. And I don't think he expected it either because, you know, it's kind of an obscure thing. Why would you put that on a new record, you know? So I asked him, I said, because of the lyrical content of the, you know, of that, I said, is that autobiographical? He kind of laughed. He says, no. He says, I've got a photo here, in my house, in my room, of an old man and a guitar, and he says that's where I got the idea from. So, I asked Sean. We were already in the studio. We had just cut Slow Train Through Georgia, and I had told Sean that I'd wanted him to do that. And so I reminded him. He goes, oh yeah. He says absolutely. So, I gave him the words and. He took a couple of passes at it, and that's what you hear. And I just thought it was fitting to put that just before we go in to Slow Train Through Georgia, which, man, Sean Camp, I mean, he just sings the pain off of
him. He does.
You know?
He does.
But the weird thing about all this is the first time that I went to visit Norman and play the record for him, after we finished playing the record, he calls me upstairs, and he shows me the picture of the old man.
Oh, the photograph. Okay.
Yeah, the actual photograph. And sure enough, it's in a small black frame on a flower paper wall. and I just kind of got a little emotional about it because, again, when you see, you know, the genesis of the work right there. And then I got to thinking, how did he get all of that out of that single picture? You know, because that's basically, it could be a short movie, you know.
Yeah.
And so Yeah, I had to put that on there, and I'm glad you asked me about that, because it's secretly one of my favorite things on the record. There's no music.
No, it's not at all. It's just it's Sean. He does a great job. I'm impressed that he's able to do that, and it leads into what is my favorite Norman Blake song of all time. And every time I stop at a railroad track, I do this alliteration in my head. Slow train through Georgia, just like the circle says, Southern serves the South. I do those five. I do that every time I stop, and that's a true story. There's five S's in a row. I don't think anyone else has used an alliteration better than that. And Slow Train Through Georgia is on that Whiskey Before Breakfast album I think we were talking about. And Sean does that when you're, of course, you're on guitar and on all these things. But that to me is every time I see a train, if I stop, that's what goes through my head. Just like that's the circle says, Southern serves the South. And that's just automatic to me. I don't even know I'm doing it half the time. If you're in the car, you probably hear me singing it.
That's awesome. You know, when Sean and I went out to Sean's place, you know, to talk about the song and everything, and Sean had some questions about the lyric because we wanted to get that right. And it was, so I called Norman up and put him on speakerphone, and it was fun watching Sean interact with Norman and ask him questions. Because, you know, we both of us wanted to know, you know, what a gondola is, you know, or all these other obscure train references. What are those things? And so, you know, we kind of got an education in a language of train talk that nobody really uses anymore. You know, and so I think that cut came out really good. I was really proud of it, and one of the things that it covers that song, but it covers all the others too, is trying to find a way to do these songs and not imitate the originals or any other kind of interpretation.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you make it your own? And certainly that was the case with this one. So I always think this one kind of has a little bit of a, almost a little bit of a Jimmy Rogers kind of feel.
Yeah, okay. It. Okay, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I even put in a little bit of Florida blues in my guitar break. You know, that's my Florida train reference, which would have been part of that Southern serves the South train line, you know. So, yeah, it was fun. It was fun to do that. I'm glad you liked it. I'm glad that's your favorite.
My all-time favorite. I'm telling you, every time that train goes by and it's got that cattail hanging out of that circle.
Yeah.
Just like the, just like the circle says, Southern serves the South. And I'm
that's
sure
right.
I've said it out loud before with people wondering what I'm saying. But you play great. You play a couple cuts on here. I'm talking to Bob Minner about his brand-new Songs of Norman Blake we've been talking about, from Sulphur Springs to Rising Fawn. So many great players. We talked about Whiskey Before Breakfast, the album that it was on. You play guitar on that, and it looks like you're also alone on Making Rag. Is that correct? You play on everything, but it looks like those two are just Bob.
Well, yeah, that and then Year of the Locust.
Okay.
Also, Old Rufus.
Okay.
Me on guitar and mandolin.
Too. Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Mandolin. So there's three that are just with me, and Making Rag is another one of those that is off the Whiskey Before Breakfast album that, you know, it's just one of those songs that I remember from my childhood and it kind of always stuck with me. And originally I had tried it a couple of times in G, like Norman, trying to cop, you know, that feel that he had on it and kind of trying to pay homage to that. And I'd go back and listen, and it was like, man, you know, you can't beat a man at his own game. I'm not going to get any better than what Norman did on the original. So I decided to kind of capo it up and kind of turn it into something that's a little different, but Norman really enjoyed the liberty I took on it. You know, I still kind of kept it the essence. And then, of course, you know, the Whiskey Before Breakfast and Fiddler's Dram medley. You know, for every guitar player coming up
in the world,
it's like that Fiddler's Dram and Whiskey Before Breakfast version that Norman did originally.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like, you know, you got to go to school on that.
Yeah,
you know, that's
absolutely
just part of something you learn. And so that's kind of my homage to it. I didn't get too far out. I kind of tried to stay a little straight to the melody. And that's the other thing too. Norman's sense of melody when he would play fiddle tunes, that always attracted me too, because even though he could get out on the edges a little bit and did sometimes, a lot of times he just hung to the melody and he just recognized the song.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So, yeah, there was three on there. And those were the most nerve-wracking because I was by myself.
Look at it. You did a great job. Look at all the we haven't even talked about Trey Hensley. We haven't talked about Tim Stafford, one of my favorite people on the planet, and he leads off the album with Last Train from Poor Valley, and we talked about Ron Block, Kenny Smith, Vince Gilli on vocals, of course, Ronnie Bowman and John Greenlight of the Southern, and then you have Dale Ann Bradley on a cut we're going to lead to in a minute, Lonesome Jenny, which, you know, you just can't go wrong with when Dale Ann's going to breathe a life into a song for you on a record.
She's the Kentucky songbird, and, you know, like I had said earlier, up when I was upstairs at George's shop and I had told him I wanted to redo Lonesome Jenny, you know, Norman's version, you know, it's straight ahead and you know, it's the definitive version because, you know, it's his song. But I thought with this song, and I can say this pretty much with everybody on the record, you know, when I chose the song, I had in my head pretty much who I wanted to approach to do it, you know, whatever song that would be. And when it came to Lonesome Jenny, I just thought bringing Dale Ann in, if she would do it, you know, I still had to ask her, and I had never met Dale Ann before. And in fact, the gentleman who introduced me to Dale Ann and hooked me up was Phil Ledbetter.
Oh, sure.
Because me and Phil would have, you know, me and Phil, I had actually met Phil in 2019, him and Steve Gulley at the Spigma Festival here in Nashville, and I actually got to write, me and Steve had planned on writing, and we certainly did, but him and Phil were roommates, and so I became quick friends with both of them. And it's hard to believe that they've both passed.
It's horrible, but it's not hard to be a quick friend with either one of them, especially Phil, who I knew better than Steve. But Phil's your friend when you meet him, and he's just a smiling guy and horrible.
Yeah.
Both of them, like you said, Jesus, I forgot about Steve, but you're right. They're both.
It's tragic, but Phil was the one who introduced me to Dale Ann. Of course, Dale Ann, she says, sure. She says, I love Norman. What do you want me to do? And so I sent her Norman's original version. And, of course, you know, he had to have a key change. But I think that particular cut that we did with her, she's such a storyteller. She's such an interpreter of lyric. And we had, of course, I had my friend Chris Carmichael do a small string section.
I was going to ask you, that's a name on here I'm not familiar with, and he's credited, so tell me a little bit about, we like to give credit to all these fine people that help us out.
I've known Chris Carmichael forever, it seems, since I've been here in Nashville. And Chris lives in Bowling Green, and I've done some sessions with him, but his forte is writing string sections for, and he does records, he does documentaries, he does movies, he does all kinds of things. And so, and not only is he a great fiddle player, but he's trained, and he can write, you know, he can compose. And so, and he's a huge Norman fan, which, you know, which I didn't know until I asked him. And so, Chris, he was just so generous with listening to me rattle on about what I thought I wanted. And I told Adam Engelhart, I said, man, I want to do a string section, you know, and I kind of, I don't want to say he was hesitant, but it was like, okay, where's this going with Dale Ann? You know, what, how often would you think of Dale Ann?
And a string section. Car? I know.
but the end result, Chris did such a great arrangement.
Beautiful.
The end result, and I, the funny thing about it is, you know, it's a 6-minute song. But I think if you put on a set of headphones in a nice dark room and just listen to that cut, I don't think it feels like 6 minutes.
No, it does not. It does not. I had to actually hold it closer to my face to see those numbers because I'm of that age. But yeah, I wouldn't have thought 6 minutes, 18 seconds. It didn't seem that long to me. I've been spinning it for a while.
And it is, you know, I would say I love all the songs on the record. I love everybody's contributions and collaborations. But when I listen to that one, Gail Ann just brings something to it that makes it super, super special.
And, you know, and her approach to vocals, we're going to play that song for the audience with a wonderful build-up like that. Her approach to the vocals is very similar to Norman Blake. I mean, they're very casual. Do you understand what I'm saying? That to me, they're like two sides of the same coin. Their approach to vocals is so talented but so easy that you don't get that they're even straining to do anything. And maybe they're not, but I think her vocals fit well with what Norman sings.
You know, I'm not a singer myself. I don't really sing. I mean, I sing parts, but you know, I'm just not a singer. But one thing that I will say about being a fan of great vocalists is that there are great singers that sing great, but then there's others that have this ability to kind of transcend the lyric and interpret the lyric.
Yeah. Okay.
And I would say Dale Ann is one of those people that just tells you the story. And of course, Norman, being the writer of these songs, I think that's his approach too. He's just telling you the story, whatever that might be, whether it's Green Light on the Southern or a Lonesome Jenny or whatever it might be. He's just telling you the story. And I think the same would go for, like, you know, I always thought of Tom T. Hall the same way.
Oh, exactly. And
storyteller.
And Lester Flatt. I mean, did you ever think he was really singing, or did you just think he was telling a story no matter what he was performing?
And, you know, that's the thing about it. It's like Lester would sing out the side of his mouth and have that lazy kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Sean, we should have included Sean on this call so he could do his thing if he does with the Earl.
Oh, he does the best.
Yeah.
But, you know, Lester didn't always hit the note.
No, but you were,
But you listen to him and you go, I believe that because he's telling me the story.
You're right,
But Dale Ann just happens to have
all of it.
She has the whole kit and caboodle. She's a great vocalist and she just tells the story. So yeah, I hope folks really enjoy Lonesome Jenny. It was a pleasure to be on the record. And Norman and Nancy both loved it too. You know, it's one of the songs that, again, you would never expect anybody to recut, but it was an honor to bring it to life.
That's great. We're gonna play that in a minute. So let me just say this again: Bob Minter from Sulphur Springs to Rising Fawn, the songs of Norman Blake. It's on EMG. But Bob, where do people find this? I know where I found it, in my mailbox because Adam takes good care of me. Adam always gives me the good stuff. So.
Well, yeah. Now, if people want the record, of course, you know, it's available on all your favorite streaming sites and everything, you know, all the popular places where people get music. But if you want a CD, you can go to my website, www.minerguitar.com, and that's MINNERTN, minerguitar.com, and you can go to my webpage and you can click on the cover of the album, and that will take you over to Englehart Music. And you can order the CD there as well. And I believe you could probably also get it off of Amazon. But, yeah, you can go to my website and click on that, or Englehart Music directly. And I encourage people because there's some liner notes in there that may be fun to read.
Yeah.
Norman and Nancy offer some liner notes. And then for all the guitar geeks, I've got a bunch of guitar information on the instruments used on the record.
Oh, you know, we didn't even get into that, and I'm not going to be able to do it. But, yeah, you chose instruments for this. Because, I mean, Norman's, I mean, the D18, I mean, come on. That's
I know. I've got an old D. I finally ended up with a 1936 D18. Got it about 3 years ago. Call it Frankie. That's another whole story. And I told Norman, I said, you know, it only took me 40 years to get you know, the same kind of old Martin that he used on that record. So, but yeah, everybody brought some great instruments, and that's another story for another time. But well, yeah, people, I hope they purchase the CD because there's a lot of fun in it.
You like it, I like it. Norman, Blake, and Nancy like it, right?
Yeah, that's kind of the most important.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really did. And it was an honor to bring the music to them. And, you know, and I had had conversations with both of them through the whole process of making the record because I didn't want to make just a tribute record and then hand it to him. I wanted him to be involved with it.
Yeah.
Because that's just a richer experience at the end, you know. And, but yeah, they love the record.
Good.
And I'm so glad that they do. And so I'm thankful for all the collaborators, and I'm thankful for folks like you that enjoyed the record and are playing it, and I appreciate all your support.
Well, you're very kind. We're going to play for the audience then, as I say goodbye to Bob Minner. We're going to play Lonesome Jenny from this album, which is just a splendid top-to-bottom 15 cuts. Bob Minner, we'll catch up to you somewhere down the road. In the meantime, thanks so much for joining us on Unreal Bluegrass.
Steve, my absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me. Right. I'll catch you down the line.
We'll see you, brother. Bye.